Welcome to Perfect Match.
Question mark.
With Brian Keller and
Michelle Drohan.
The podcast in which we discuss tennis as it relates to broader issues in the culture writ large.
Writ large. Sure like that term.
I like writ large.
Okay.
We are currently a monogamous couple.
Currently, yes.
Or rather, I identify as monogamous to you.
You present monogamous in real life, but maybe not online.
Online, I present as solo poly.
You don't. And that's, I just want to make that clear to our listeners that that's bullshit.
As far as you know.
As far as I know.
Anyway, in today's episode, we're gonna go deep in the new Zendaya tennis movie, Challengers. Is it a tennis movie about a love triangle or a love triangle movie where people play tennis? Also, how does it stack up against previous tennis-oriented movies like Kirsten Dunst's vehicle Wimbledon, for example? We'll find out. But first off, Challengers. We went and saw Challengers.
We did. We went and saw Challengers on a matinee, because it was only $10 in Manhattan, at Angelica East on Saturday. And I was pleasantly surprised to see that the theater, while not full, was fuller for a matinee on a Saturday. And it was mostly younger people who were obviously there to see Zendaya, which yes. I'm totally okay with.
I noticed a few older people walked in at some point. I was thinking, oh, those are the tennis people.
Yes, we and those older people are the tennis people and the younger people are the Zendaya people. But what I love about it is that I don't care why you came in. You're coming in and maybe you're going to be exposed to the world of tennis in a way that might pique your interest. I'm not saying all those young ladies are going to be become
picking
tennis.
Up a racket.
They were just becoming tennis fans and starting to watch tennis, but it was refreshing.
I thought so too. You know, and the subject matter is kind of racy. If you've seen the ads, there's a scene they play in the trailer where the two male leads and Zendaya are on a bed and she's between them and they start making out, and the marketing kind of makes it seem like that's the focus of the movie, like it's the threesome tennis movie.
Yes. I mean, the director, Luca Guadagnino, is known for racy, sexy movies. But I'm not going to... It's not a spoiler. I feel like this is not a spoiler to say that this isn't a movie about a threesome. It's a movie...
Sadly, it is not a movie about a threesome between Zendaya and these two very hot young
yes
actors.
I mean, everybody's very hot and very sexy. It's a movie about a love triangle, and but it's not a movie about a threesome,
because
and I think the trailer kind of wanted to indicate that it was.
I mean, that scene is really something. I mean, when I was watching it in the theater, I was thinking to myself, I've seen a lot of porn that starts out this way. But
that was your thought. And were you just
it felt familiar to me.
You did it,
way.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, but then I had to remind myself, like, okay, I'm in an R-rated movie in a theater. I'm not at home on the internet.
You're not in, it's not Times Square in the 70s.
a little too young for that, but it's not Pornhub currently.
Okay, I think you're revealing a little too much about your at-home habits, but that's okay.
This is what people like, though. They want to know who we really are, to a degree, I guess.
To a degree.
Okay.
But, okay, I'm just saying, yes, there's this moment in the movie where you didn't know what was going to happen. Zendaya, as a character, comes in. She plays this young, very sexy, up-and-coming tennis player named Tashi. And she is very provocative, and she knows that these two young players are hot for her, and she manipulates them and the scene in a really, really fun way.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it sets up the whole central conflict of the movie, and that, you know, the performances are great, I think. Zendaya is Zendaya. She plays a quite unlikable character, I thought, but it somehow worked in the movie?
I think essentially all of them are unlikable. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I think the moment in which she manipulates them in that room when they're young junior tennis players, it sets the tone that everybody is going to be manipulating each other throughout the course of this film to try to get what they want.
And as we've discussed before, tennis being a solo sport, tennis players can be kind of manipulative and can sometimes be assholes.
Oh, absolutely. Your number one goal as a tennis player is to win by any means necessary.
For yourself, not for your team.
No, but for yourself. And if you have to beat and humiliate the person across the net, whether you like them or respect them or whatever, you have to expose their weaknesses. That's the number one thing any tennis coach will teach you. Find the weaknesses of your opponent and exploit them. Get them off balance. These are physical types of conversation, like tips and advice. But when you apply that to an emotional relationship.
Well, I was going
to
say, this sounds like how you've approached our relationship from the beginning. And it's worked.
Well, I mean, that's what relationships are, power struggles.
And are they?
I mean, they can be. They can be. And this took the world of tennis, applied it to relationships. I mean, I feel like there's layers upon layers upon layers of this movie because it's set in the world of tennis. And I think it was intentional from the screenwriter that it was set in the world of tennis for those very reasons. And I think a lot of people are going to go see this movie and be like, oh, it's fun and sexy and entertaining. But for someone like me and you who know the game of tennis and what it takes to play and win, it's a little bit deeper, I think, than people are giving it credit for.
Yeah, I identified with Art, played by Mike Feist.
Did you?
Yeah, the court husband. Well, he struggles with his tennis. He struggles with failure. I struggle with this on the court a lot. As we've talked about previously on this podcast, you beat me. We don't even really play for points because it wouldn't matter, because you would just win and I would feel bad. And I kind of like understood his plight a bit, being this champion who had won something like 10 Grand Slams prior, which sounds a little bit like an exaggeration, and now is having to go back down to the challenger circuit to gain confidence, where he re-meets his old junior doubles partner, Patrick, played by Josh O'Connor.
Yes, yes. So that's a good point. He's won all these slams, and yet he is still, A, seeking the love and acceptance of Tashi, played by Zendaya, and he's also still struggling with the idea that Patrick can take his everything away from him that matters, even though Patrick is a struggling tennis player who has to sleep in his car and play a challenger event for money and can't afford a hotel room. And yet Art is the one who's deeply, deeply insecure because he just feels like his woman and his best friend, there's a lot of sexual tension between the two young men, he just feels inadequate.
He does, and there's some awkwardness in the movie where they refer at least once to Patrick's character's big dick.
Yes.
And including a very homoerotic scene in the sauna in which Patrick just walks in essentially naked.
Yes, and Art asks him to put his dick away.
Says, put your dick away.
Yeah, and Patrick's response is, it's a sauna. Which was hilarious, I have to say. But the scenes between them, there's also online the scene where they're eating churros.
Yes.
Has kind of become viral too. So there's all this underlying homoeroticism, sexual tension between the two young men who end up making out in that early scene where we think there's going to be a threesome and they are caught up in each other.
They discover something they hadn't maybe acknowledged prior to.
Potentially.
Well, I mean, the sexual energy is really in the forefront, actually, throughout, between the two men, mainly. Like, the sexual tension and competition. Early on, there's a bet where whoever wins the U.S. Open Junior final gets Zendaya's number.
Yes, yes. And Patrick got her number.
Big Dick Patrick gets
Big
the number.
I guess that's what we'll call him moving forward, is keep, Big Dick
so
Patrick.
So that the listeners kind of can keep this straight without having seen the movie.
Absolutely. But yeah, he wins that match. He gets her number. And there are scenes where Art, who is the insecure one,
who's hopelessly in love with
hopelessly in love and is more successful on the court, but because he didn't win that match and because he wasn't the first one that got to be with her, he's always feeling insecure, and he cast the seeds of doubt early on when they're still in college playing college tennis. And he isn't exactly the greatest guy either. I mean, you feel sorry for him occasionally, but there are moments throughout the movie where he's trying to mess up their relationship because he's so, so jealous and he's so, so in love.
Yeah, that's true. As I am with you, sweetheart.
Oh, that's so sweet.
That's why I identify with art.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
I also identify with Patrick, but I won't go into why. So on the opposite side of the spectrum of Challengers, which I think we both agree, it's a good movie. Tennis or no tennis, it's an interesting... It's a bit long.
It's a bit long. I'm not here to do a movie review per se, but the last 20 minutes could have been shortened extensively. I felt like the last 20 minutes was kind of left the realistic realm of tennis and was trying to make a point about the two men playing, and they kind of lost the plot to me because whatever they were playing at the end, it was so accurate from a tennis perspective until that moment, intentionally, I think. But the last match tiebreak that they had just bordered
on
the...
It went off the rails.
It was absurd. It was absurd. And I felt like I started to get annoyed. Whatever, that's fine, but that's not what we're here to do.
It was like, here's another slow motion serve, and here's the Trent Reznor techno soundtrack coming in, and again and again. Toward the end, it sort of grates.
But it succeeded in so many other ways that I forgive it. I'm okay with it. Again, everyone's talking about this movie. I just want to reiterate how excited I am that people are talking about this movie, which means they're talking about tennis.
Absolutely. And it's produced by Zendaya. Thank you, Zendaya.
Thank you, Zendaya.
For putting a spotlight on tennis, not pickleball, actual tennis played by actual people in a realistic setting.
Yes.
It was...
Respect to Zendaya. I bow to Zendaya. But I also want to acknowledge the screenwriter. So Justin Kuritskes. Oh, I feel like I'm butchering his name. But I want to say... I want to give him a shout out just because he was a struggling playwright who wasn't really a tennis fan until he saw a critical match between Naomi Osaka and Serena Williams where she got a point penalty or she got a point warning for coaching and she lost her shit.
It was Patrick at the US Open.
It's just another way that Serena's just been unfairly penalized for things in her career. And he was watching this match and he was so struck by this idea that you're out there alone on the court dealing with all of this stuff. And he started to get into tennis and he started watching it obsessively. And when he kind of ran out of, you know, tour level matches to watch, he started getting into the Challengers Tour, which I find fascinating, but maybe because he's a playwright and he gets deep, deep into it, he wrote a screenplay. And it became one of the hottest screenplays, unproduced screenplays, in Hollywood for a period of time. It's also worth noting that his wife, Celine Song, writer of and director of Past Lives, which was an Academy Award-winning screenplay. Now I feel like the two of them are kind of a power couple in the way that Zendaya and her husband Art were some power couple in Challengers.
Well, all of them have box access, center court box access, any Grand Slam they probably want to go to
at this point. Yeah, but I really credit him with bringing the tennis world to life and what I think is, like, he did his homework.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't even really know much about the Challenger circuit, and it was interesting to hear them talk about, like, why people go back down to it and what it's like and the way the court and the line judge and the small amount of people, it did feel very true what we were watching.
Well, and the other thing I want to mention is that he read Andre Agassi's memoir, Open, and Andre, who had won a number of Grand Slams at one point, had gone down to play a Challenger event to get his confidence back in Nevada. And when he read that, I think it sparked an idea in him. And that's just to say that, again, he did his homework. The movie represents tennis and the tennis world, whether you're going into a challenger event and lacking confidence and regaining confidence, or whether you're a juniors, whether you're in college, whether you're playing at one of the big events. I felt it explained the world of tennis in a way that wasn't heavy-handed, but if I didn't know tennis, I would walk away from this film knowing a little bit more about the world of it.
Right. And accurately portrayed is key, and entertainingly.
Right. But you had read something about the scoring. Like, he didn't bother.
He doesn't bother trying to explain how tennis scoring works, because he just said, I didn't want to talk down to the viewer. I'm
right.
hoping they.
And just avoiding all of that.
Just he avoided all of it.
I think was a smart move.
It was. And as part of the research for this episode, Michelle and I have been watching a number of tennis movies. Most of them are bad. some of them are really bad. And that brings us to the Kirsten Dunst vehicle, Wimbledon, from the year 2004.
Yes, Brian had never seen this film. And I had, obviously, because someone makes a movie called Wimbledon, has access to Wimbledon, I'm going to watch it. And this was back in 2004. And so we rewatched it, and I didn't think the movie was very good when I saw it, but I didn't realize how bad it actually was upon a rewatch.
It's so bad, and Kirsten Dunst plays a top, top level player, a sort of Rybakina level, top three, and she's there to win Wimbledon, and she gets mixed up with this other player who's sort of coming up. And does a surprise run in the first week.
Well, he's not coming. He's a veteran. He's a veteran player who has a surprise run at Wimbledon, right? So this is his last tournament, his last swan song. But
the first time they meet...
What happens?
This is such a Hollywood setup. She's in this fabulous hotel room. He somehow gets directed to the wrong hotel room, which is unlocked.
He has a key.
Oh, he has a key.
But he's been given the wrong key.
It's not a digital key like now. It's like he has a key. And it's like somehow unlocks the door to this very famous, very rich female tennis player who happens to be alone in her suite taking a shower at the time.
Yes.
And he kind of just walks in the bathroom and says hello.
Like, oh, whoopsie.
and she just kind of turns to him. There's a glass door there. And turns to him. We don't see her naked, but we presume she is.
We can see that she is naked. Right. It's just frosted glass.
And she was like, oh, hello, who are you?
Yeah, there is no outrage. She's not scared.
There's no security concerns.
Right. She's just like, hello. Ha, ha, ha. Isn't this cute and funny? And he's like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. That is insane to me.
It was like a meet cute, but through the eyes of a man who has watched too much pornography.
I mean,
getting back to the earlier thing.
Right, yes, get it good.
But it was just so strange and
it's an odd scene to watch in 2024. Like it's right. 20 years later and that scene doesn't work anymore.
No, so much from that era doesn't work anymore for so many reasons. But that's not even the worst. I mean, that's just kind of strange and awkward and tacky. But then the whole movie then starts to I can't even say it's a Lifetime movie or a Hallmark Christmas movie, because those movies know what they are and what they're trying to do,
right.
What they need to do.
Right.
This movie doesn't seem to know what it needs to do or who it's for or why it exists.
Right. It's aspiring to be with the cast. And they got permission, obviously. They're in Wimbledon. They're using the name. They've got, John McEnroe and Chrissy Everett playing commentators, and their lines are terrible. Not their fault, but the script is terrible. But my biggest problem, and you have problems with this movie, but my biggest problem with this movie is that this guy, played by Paul Bettany, makes this great run. He's
in the second week.
He's British. Number one. Number two, he makes it to the second week where he's playing in the quarterfinals and the semifinals, and he's not playing on center court. He's okay, playing on that, a fucking outer court.
There's that. They keep him on the outer courts, even though it's like never, the quarterfinal.
That would just never happen. The quarterfinals and the semifinals are played on
and
center
he's British.
Court. And the fact that he's British, and then I don't know if they couldn't get center court for more than one day.
I think that's probably what... Or maybe that's part of the story where he's this sort of contender.
No, I mean, it's just silly. It's just silly. You spend all this time, and you make this movie, and you call it Wimbledon...
Yeah,
you gotta get it.
They have no concern with the way that Wimbledon actually works. And even worse than that, they're in the second week, and there's this scene where there's this big, like, late night party where, in the second week of Wimbledon, all the top players are attending and, you know, eating random hors d'oeuvres off of trays and drinking champagne and
lots of it.
And carrying on. Yeah, and it's late at night, and it's like, even in 2004, there was no way the top players are. You're flouncing around at some party, you know, sipping glasses of champagne.
I mean, it's not the 70s and 80s. It's not like Vitas Gerulaitis and John McEnroe going to Studio 54, right? It's Wimbledon, and then she, Kirsten Dunst, and Paul Bettany just take off. And they seem to be up for, like, more than 20...
Well, because they cut to them in a convertible, speeding around England somewhere... as if they had been up all night, sort of carrying on and falling in love and drinking and what have you.
Yes, and then, you know, the father of Kirsten Dunst comes to find them because he's so concerned that she's not going to be able to play well, and rightfully so. I mean, she's been up all night drinking, and she's not really thinking about winning. And it's just... everything about it is silly. It's
well, and then when the father finds them, she delivers the line of the movie,
which is
this.
I still want it.
Oh, hi.
I want to win Wimbledon.
I want to win Wimbledon.
So convincing.
Yeah, I still want it.
I want to win Wimbledon. I think Kirsten Dunst was just like, this script is so bad. I mean, she's a great actress, but the performances in this movie... Sam Neill, everyone's terrible.
I think everyone gave up on it after a couple days of shooting. They realized this is just going to completely
stink. They thought that the idea of the movie being called Wimbledon and being shot at Wimbledon would carry it, but the script was just terrible.
Horrific. So the verdict is, go see Challengers. Thank you, Zendaya. Respect to the Queen.
Yes, I mean...
Do not bother streaming Wimbledon.
No, and I would say if we were going to rank this movie as it relates to all the other tennis movies that have been out there, whether it's Wimbledon, whether it's Battle of the Sexes with Emma Stone and Steve Carell, whether it's King Richard, those movies, Battle of the Sexes and King Richard and Wimbledon, are all kind of trying to do something different. Either they're looking at something historical and trying to bring that to life, or they're trying to set this in a very specific world and turn it into a rom-com. But what I love about Challengers is they took a very good script and they set it in the world of tennis in a way that is accurate, authentic, and understandable, but doesn't feel like they're trying to push an agenda or try to make you understand something about the history of tennis.
Right. The movie's really about these three people and the weird world of the Challengers circuit as opposed to the pro circuit is where it takes place. And I think that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would come away with this understanding what it means to be a challenger college or whether you go to the pro tour immediately, what it means to qualify and the money that's at stake and how hard it is when you're not in the top 100 of the rankings.
Which that, could change based on, but that's another episode.
That's another episode. But all in all, if you like tennis and you're a tennis fan, go see this movie. I'm not going to say that it's like it's not perfect. You might have problems with it, but support it because we want to see more like it.
We do. And this has been Perfect Match.
?
Join us next week for another exciting episode about something that's going to happen this week, I guess.
Who knows?
We'll see.